From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 25th day of January, 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. And a bit later in the program, we'll take up the weather forecast that with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Along the way, we'll update the cash grain market with the folks at the Anderson's Climbers facility outside of Logansport, Indiana, and hear all about the agricultural news, including something new about Sonny Perdue and a senator from Iowa. And it all happens right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this 25th day of January, 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon to you, Michael.
Nice to be with you this midweek, Todd.
I appreciate you taking the time with us. I know you're not available on Friday. And frankly, when you called and asked if you could switch, I thought, boy, this is going to help me out a lot. I need somebody on Wednesday. Tomorrow I'm traveling with Farm Credit, and we'll be out with Aaron Hager, too. We'll be talking about dicamba beans while we're on the road with him. We'll be in Carlinville, actually Magnuson, there at the hotel. That's right on Interstate 55 in the morning. And then over at Prentice, which is a Beard Implement at the noon hour outside of Ashland. Prentice is a little bitty burg where Beard Implement is. I've heard him talk about dicamba, and it is a story that you really need to hear if you're happen to be a producer, so we'll bring him to the folks that are listening to our program tomorrow, and then we'll also have Dan on Friday. So it all works out really well for me, I think, probably as it does for you. So appreciate that much. Now, let's turn our attention to what's been happening in the marketplace. What have you watched on this first week of the Trump administration in Washington, D.C., and everything that's coming out of there as it relates to the marketplace? And the Dow, in fact, going over 20,000 at some points.
Yeah, and you didn't see a big sell-off in the commodity sphere as a result of this big rally, this historic rally in the Dow. We did see a weaker metals market, Todd. We saw the silver and gold break back down today, and we saw some other commodities, you know, take a second look at maybe taking some profit buy longs. But overall, we didn't see that normal trade where it's buy stocks and sell commodities, which that's a good sign. I think your first part of your question is probably where I'm at completely this week, is that there was already technically overbought conditions in the daily charts for corn, beans, and wheat. And we've got so much policy uncertainty in Washington and political uncertainty in Washington relating to NAFTA, relating to EPA and the RFS, and relating to RIN credits, and just it seems like every 3 or 4 hours each day this week we've had new stories come out that create more uncertainty. And I think this is fertile environment for the algorithmic computer trading. And so times like this, when we have markets like these and this kind of news flashing all over the place, I kind of take a step back and say, okay, where are we? We're in midweek now. We've been driven by these algo and nervous long type position holders, and it's forced grains back into last week's price lows. But we haven't taken those lows out, and I think it's because we've got 7 week lows in the dollar, we've got improved export demand, and I think we still have some uncertainty out of South America and whether that crop's getting shorter, not so much in Argentina, but more in Brazil, especially Mato Grosso. So these three things, along with the export sales tomorrow, I think will drive the trade in the medium term, not just maybe the rest of the week, but especially in the medium term. Is the high end in beans? That seems to be the question that I'm getting most from producers right now.
What's your thought on the Mato Grosso soybean yield or the problems there? Is there something that they're not seeing coming out of the field? I thought they should have been looking at something really that was very good.
They are, and I think what probably the part of the problem here as far as the trade going back and forth is how much rain will Mato Grosso get the next 10 days? And a week from today, we'll know this because we'll be in the 7-day of the 10-day outlook period in the models today. But right now, those models have shifted from 7 inches of rain in the next 10 days to 5 inches of rain to 2 inches of rain back to 4 inches of rain in the next 10 days. And so Mato Grosso wanting to harvest beans and put corn in into plant it right behind it for the second crop is on the eye or the head of the needle right now, trying to get the beans out and the corn in very, very quickly. And this next 2 weeks is extremely important because as you get past the 20th and 25th of January, my understanding is that really opens you up to being susceptible to much lower than average corn yields because you get in the time of the crop period where the crop's reproducing in just a very bad, low rain, hot temperature environment. So I think it's probably more nervousness about what could be ahead of us as opposed to what they're doing right now. Right now, it looks like they're doing fairly well in yields, and for the most part, they're on track with harvest.
So, in fact, the delay, potential delay in harvest because of rainfall and then the cascading problem that would have with the safrina or second crop corn, mostly because they are closer to the equator and they have wet seasons and dry seasons, and they're really quite predictable. And the later you get, the more likely you'll be into that dry season during a time when corn really needs to have more rainfall than might be available to it. What else have you been watching at this time?
Well, we've noticed a pretty big shift in the bean-corn ratio for the new crop, and shift in terms of the corn standing up a lot better than what one would expect if we had weather problems in South America. However, that kind of ties into what you just said. And I would say the USDA, and this goes back to my conversation I had with them after the January crop report, the USDA is very sincere about us losing a lot of export demand in the coming 60 days to especially Brazil, but Argentina as well, but especially Brazil. And I think this is a big, big question mark as the weather turns more negative for corn planting in Brazil. That makes their potential export supplies not as much available, and it elongates or extends our export demand. And so it would not be odd for this market to continue to see the December corn build on November beans, especially now that we've had these Informa acreage numbers and these farm futures acreage numbers pushing the beans out so high in terms of potential springtime acres up here in the United States. So I'd be watching that ratio very closely because between what you're talking about with your dicamba product, and I'll be interested to hear what your interview says on that, but between that and this spread, it's not a done deal that these bean acres are going to be planted next year in this country with the numbers that we're looking at right now.
So we'll be watching that. Do you have any recommendations for farmers this week? Last week you did.
Yeah, I did buy some corn puts on the weekend copy for the short term, this next 10 days, because I'm essentially saying we've got overbought conditions that could bring us a correction. We've started to see that correction. We've got uncertainty in the political sphere, which I think will be at a peak during this next couple weeks. But then I can wait for the weather and see exactly how the weather looks. And I don't have to let go of cash crop in case we do have problems materialize in Mato Grosso and we could see a substantial move back up in the corn. So the big number I'm watching, Todd, with some short-term cheap puts in place is that 200-day moving average in March corn right around 370. If we close above that, I think we'll run some buy stops. And I think we could get into that 380, 385 level in March and really start looking at $4 cash in parts of the central and eastern corn belt again for making some old crop cash sales.
I don't know whether you will have thought about this, and it just popped into my head as I was thinking about some livestock questions I could ask you. I know we might talk about some of the cattle numbers, but given the Trump administration and Smithfield, have you had any thoughts about China and their ownership in the livestock sector in the United States?
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to, I think, the Chinese currency. And I can tell you that there's five or six fundamental variables that will probably give us an indication of whether China goes into a financial crisis or a debt crisis or a currency crisis in a variety of ways that some people are worried about right now, but it really hinges upon whether their currency weakens any more than it already does. And if their currency does weaken more than it already does, has already, it'll probably create more of an environment where China fights the United States even more and they stir the nationalistic type pot. That's been their history anyway, is that when they have problems domestically, they try to stir the nationalistic pot so that their people get unhappy with the other things going on around them instead of what's going on internally. So to me, the best of both worlds would be a trending sideways dollar and a firming Chinese yuan. And that would give us, I think, the stability politically to navigate 2017, because I think there's some good times ahead if we can get through 2017.
Michael, thanks for talking to me on this Wednesday afternoon.
Thanks for reshuffling your schedule, and thanks to everybody who accommodated me. Take care, Todd.
You are so welcome. That, of course, is Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison. In today's agricultural news, guess what? We'll start in Washington, D.C. The Senate Agriculture Committee is not expected to hold a confirmation hearing on Sonny Perdue's nomination for Agriculture Secretary until mid-February or perhaps even late in the month, that according to a transition team source. It will take several weeks for the nominee's financial disclosures to be thoroughly analyzed for potential conflicts of interest and for his FBI background check to be completed. Issues related to receipt and evaluation of ethics and financial disclosures paperwork, Perdue's financial statements from 2006 when he last ran for governor of Georgia show he was worth about $6 million and his businesses about $2.8 million. He's the founder of Perdue Partners. That's a global trading firm that helps companies export food ingredients like grains, nuts, produce, and alcohol, along with industrial supplies, pet food, and cosmetics. Perdue also has owned a number of grain and feed processing and transportation companies. Well, let's stay in Washington, D.C., but switch over to the Farm Bill. Senate Agriculture Committee ranking member Debbie Stabenow of Michigan, she's a Democrat, used her 5 minutes of questions during the Senate Budget Committee's confirmation hearing Tuesday for Mick Mulvaney, Trump's choice to head OMB, to drive at ensuring adequate funding for the Farm Bill. After noting cuts made to agricultural programs as part of the 2014 reauthorization, Stabenow asked if Mulvaney intends to propose reductions to the Farm Bill and investments in rural America in his budgets, despite the fact that farmers and families have already contributed significant savings towards deficit reductions. Mulvaney's response was that's to be determined. Senator, he says, I know the Farm Bill is absolutely critical to you, as it is to many other members, including Mr. Grassley, to whom I spoke about this. I apologize. It's been several years, I think, since the House has taken it up, so I'm not in a position to give you an intelligent answer to the question. But we look forward to talking to members of all parties about how to both maintain and improve and make more efficient the Farm Bill. Elsewhere in Washington, D.C., the 2017 RFS, or the Renewable Fuel Standard Volumes, are among the roughly 30 EPA regulations that have been frozen by the White House Chief of Staff Reince Priebus' memo on Friday that directed agencies to halt pending regulatory activities. This is according to the notice, which is due to post to the Federal Register today. If any of the rules are delayed beyond March 21, the agency would take public comment on the new proposed effective date. Any changes to a regulation would also have to go through notice and comment rulemaking. The Renewable Fuels Association, or RFA, that's a trade group, told Reuters yesterday it did not expect the procedural hold to lead to any significant changes to the RFS, since the delay is only until March. On a related note, the Department of Agriculture has not released a list of its regs that are on hold, but it's expected to include the GPSA rules, the newly finalized SNAP retailer standards, and the organic poultry welfare requirements. Well, as we reported in yesterday's program, the ag industry has asked Mr. Trump to preserve NAFTA's win for farmers. More than 130 agricultural groups and companies want President Trump to modernize NAFTA in a way that maintains its windfall successes for the U.S. food and agricultural industries, while also tackling some trade barriers that the deal didn't address. The market integration provided by NAFTA has increased competitiveness in the face of a rapidly changing global economy, the letter says, noting that U.S. food and agricultural exports to both Canada and Mexico have more than quadrupled from $8.9 billion in 1993, the year before the pact took effect, to $38.6 billion in 2015. Well, up next, a longtime Midwest GOP ag senator says he's not sold yet on President Donald Trump's pick for agriculture secretary. Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley wants to hear more from former Georgia Governor Sonny Perdue on how he'll help Midwest producers. Grassley makes no pretenses. He wants a Midwesterner to head the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Instead, President Trump picked former Georgia Governor Sonny Perdue. Now, Perdue grew up on a farm, is a veterinarian, and the CEO of a global ag trading firm. But Grassley's not convinced.
I'm reserving judgment because, I thought we needed somebody from the Midwest because that's where the family farm institution is so strong. And to make sure that that was foremost in the minds of people that work at the Department of Agriculture.
Here's the way Grassley sees former ag secretaries from the South or Carolina.
And I've always felt like the appreciation of the family farm wasn't expressed as and protected as well by them. Now, that may sound negative towards Perdue, and I may be negative towards Perdue someday, but I've got to give him a chance to talk to me and give me his philosophy, and I'm going to do that before I make a final judgment.
Grassley says he actively lobbied the Trump transition team for a Midwesterner for Ag Secretary, including when Vice President Pence put forward Indiana's Ag Chief for consideration. Grassley says he now hopes the president will pick a deputy secretary, undersecretaries, or assistant secretaries who can bring a Midwestern ag perspective to the department. The senator expects to meet with Perdue in a few days and for the Senate Ag Committee to hold a confirmation hearing in the next couple of weeks. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Stephen Linneber is on the phone line now. He's at the Anderson's Climbers facility. They're kind of busy there this afternoon. Stephen, thanks for being with me. Give me a quick update of what's happening.
Oh, just a little bit of corn starting to break loose as we've tried the 370 market here ahead of yesterday's downward turn. But getting some corn movement here to where now we're just trying to analyze exactly what is yet to come here as we approach planting season.
Did it surprise you corn moved at 370?
A little bit, but I think it also helps that we've had some opportunity to sell 1050 plus beans. So you're taking a little bit of that margin and probably carrying it over to your corn sale and getting it to $4 if you want a price leverage. So I think that the bean market has definitely helped us. Probably not that surprised as 4.25 offers have sat there a while and have never gotten filled. So we watch that order continue to get worked down lower. And I think with where basis is at locally, 375 cash corn was, I guess, better than, 60 cents better than what it could have delivered at fall.
That was my next question. So you were 5 over when they delivered. What are you today?
7 over at the moment. Just needing to actually, we've improved just a little to even out with our February bid. That way, we can maybe kind of open up some February contract here into next week, with not much time left in January.
Hey, thanks so much, and have a good day.
Yeah, thanks, Don.
Stephen Linneber is with the Anderson's Climbers facility outside of Logansport, Indiana. This is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this 25th day of January. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, joined by Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, thanks for being with us. Can you take me overseas to Ukraine and Russia for a moment? Give me an update on conditions there. Do we have concerns at all?
I think we have concerns for the spring, or at least the late winter, early spring, not because of winter kill as a result of extremely cold conditions. It has been a very cold winter in Russia. But there's lots of snow on the ground, and that's where the problem is. Not that the snow hasn't protected the crop, because it has, but we have an interesting situation. You know, in this country, we are watching real closely North Dakota and Manitoba because they have so much snow on the ground, and there's all this talk about the Red River Basin of the north having a serious flood this spring and causing problems with planting progress across those areas. Well, in Russia and Ukraine, the same thing is present, but it covers a huge area of real estate. And the amount of crop country that could be flooded over there would be just tremendous, and there would be all kinds of problems with flooding and also with delays in spring field work. So we're going to be watching this real closely. Their snow depths are, I think, on average running between 20 and 30 inches in a very large region over there. There's some areas that only have about a foot and a half, but The ground is saturated beneath the snow, and if it all decides that it's going to melt at once, we're going to have a real serious situation over there. So we're watching this real closely. Most of the wet weather, which actually has occurred for 3 months, 3 months of above average precipitation, has come to an end, and we're seeing some drier weather now, but all that snow is on the ground and it's too cold to melt it right now.
And speaking of wet weather coming to an end, that happened in Argentina. What are conditions like today?
You know, it's amazing how quickly you can firm up the ground in the summertime. I'm always amazed at that here in the United States, and the same thing's happening in Argentina. It was just a week ago that the ground was too wet and saturated, and flooding was present. There's still standing water in many areas in Argentina, don't get me wrong, but those areas that drain well, their topsoil's already firmed up again because it's been more than 7 days without rain, and temperatures have been in the 90s every afternoon. So Argentina is going to go through another week of similar conditions with very little precipitation and 90 degrees. In fact, a few 100-degree temperatures are going to occur. So the drying is going to continue. The areas of standing water that have damaged crops, that's probably going to hang on for a while, but it's not going to cause any new damage. It will rain in the first week of February, and that should keep us from getting too dry there.
In Mato Grosso, Brazil, the soybean harvest is underway. Just the beginnings there. What do you see?
They're certainly well ahead of that process. In fact, 11% of the crop has already been brought in. That's compared to 4% normal at this time of the year. And the weather's been ideal, but we're going to move into a little wetter biased mode here for a little bit. So there will be a slowdown in field progress, but the Brazilians are famous for harvesting that crop when scattered showers occur on a daily basis, and I'm sure they will do that again this year. And so I would expect a slowdown in the harvest, but not a complete halt to it. And so progress will be made, but at a slower pace.
That, of course, is Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City, Missouri. Joins us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason.